Something wicked is coming this way, and only fools are ignoring the signs. So it's time you became a financial prepper like thousands of others. Gold can travel anywhere. It's international. It's its own currency. Allocate to gold now, the timeless safe haven asset. Open an IRA with Noble Gold Investments to physically hold coins and bars, and let real, tangible gold, not just paper, save your portfolio as the economy burns again. Right now, Noble Gold Investments offers a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin with every qualified IRA. Just use the promo code GOLD to claim your free coin and secure your family's financial future. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now. NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Now, this is where I think it's going to get really interesting. Who was the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency from 2012 to 2014?
Welcome back once again, my friends, to another episode of Red Pill News. I hope you're having a lovely day. As always, my name is Zach Payne, the Corruption Detector. And in today's episode, I'm bringing you an incredible interview I did with a really amazing patriot, an incredible scholar, very intelligent guy by the name of Ivan Raiklin. Now, Ivan may be memorable to you if you're from Virginia. Back in 2018, he ran for Senate. But I remembered him from Twitter back in the day because he was such an amazing analyst. He's an intelligence community professional. He's been a lawyer for, almost two decades now. And Ivan really knows his stuff. He's also notable because he believes that Mike Pence is not a good guy. We go into his theory in detail. And in the future, Ivan is going to be appearing on the show for a full 2 hours. And I'm in the process of arranging a roundtable between he, I, and John, aka Patel Patriot. I think it's going to be a great show. So please do me a favor, sit back, relax, and grab your popcorn. We're going to be right back after this.
Okay, let's start over. Okay, welcome back to day two of the Moment of Truth Summit here in beautiful St. Louis, Missouri. Is it St. Louis or is it Springfield? Springfield. It's my first time.
Isn't that where the Simpsons are from? Springfield?
Springfield, yes, that's correct. I don't know that it's Missouri, but Springfield. Anyways, we're here with Ivan Deep State Marauder Raiklin, Ivan Penscard Raiklin. I used to follow this guy on Twitter. He does incredible work. I'm really excited that we're going to be able to spend some time together. He's telling me that I'm going to get deleted, but Ivan, I'll tell you what, I've already been deleted from every major social media platform, even Apple, where I currently publish. It was a bit of a hoop that I had to jump through to get back on there, and I recently got deleted from Google Podcasts. So okay, it comes with the territory.
Well, that's why I'm on your podcast, because I see that you're willing to put out the truth, and I'm willing to provide some of the truth based on the research that I've been able to put together. So I'm glad to be here. Exciting. Let's get into it.
All right.
Where do you want to start?
Let's dive right in. So as I was asking you just before we began with this podcast here, how did you get involved in political commentary, investigations, and marauding the deep state?
Okay, I got to be careful what I say here. Everything I'm saying right now is in my personal capacity, private citizen Ivan Raiklin, in my personal time, and in no way, shape, or form does it have anything to do with any research or knowledge that I may have gotten over the course of a lifetime career and other things that I may or may not have been involved in.
Ipso facto, deep special operations and intelligence investigations.
Possibly. Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head. But I'm also a constitutional lawyer in addition to what you may have alluded to there.
Okay, that's great. So
over a 25-year career, what you may have alluded to.
So very, very, a varied set of experiences that come in extremely handy for trying to save America.
Yeah, let's just say in the past I may or may not have done some countering of ISIS, Taliban, Russian aggression, MS-13 in Spanish, Arabic, French, and Russian.
Hey, that's excellent. And like I said, it prepares you very well for what we're doing here right now. So when I used to follow you on Twitter, you know, you were a beast. You were calling things out. You were dissecting the machinations of the deep state. I got deleted from Twitter November 4th of 2020. Maybe
you
November 3rd, really.
Oh, that's respect. So that now I respect you more because you got deleted way before I did. Mine was I actually purged Twitter myself. Because I knew what was coming. So I put out a press release, and I think one of my last tweets on just January 7th, right after the illegal certification on January 6th to 7th, I basically said, good knowing you. I'll see you somewhere else.
Right.
And then the following day, they nuked my account.
So were you also present in D.C. on January 6th? That was there covering it as a journalist.
So absolutely. I attended the rally at the Ellipse. I was able to get a VIP area there, and I listened to the speech, and it was great. And then
everything went to shit.
I'm just trying to see where we need to start and kind of continue to be able to explain things. Well, since we're on let's just focus in on the January 6th component of this.
Okay.
I think this is where I think a lot of people have been focusing some efforts, and we're going to tie it into this raid because there's a lot to unravel here. This raid really as you listen to everything I speak about, you need to go under the framework of Mike Pence is the deep state's candidate for 2024 to be able to be the president and continue to provide cover for the Uniparty for all of their transgressions going at least back to 2016, yes. July of 2016 to be exact, and actually all the way back to 1973 in some instances. And we can go as deep or as superficial on all of these as possible. I say humbly today here that I probably have the most in-depth research and knowledge of that ecosystem than any other investigative journalist in the country and in the world. And I'm trying to say that in a humble way, seriously.
Absolutely. All right. Well, it's a big statement, but I believe you because I've seen your work and I've seen what you've pieced together. So I guess let's go back to July of 2016. What are you specifically pointing to right there?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. You just teed that up perfectly.
I'm a professional.
I see. July of 2016. And you're going to know a lot of this based on already the line of questioning, because this is our first time interacting. Sure. July of 2016, if you can recall, we'll start with that. Who was foisted onto Donald J. Trump as the vice presidential?
Mike Pence.
And why was that done, in your estimation?
Well, I mean, publicly, the idea that Donald Trump needed the evangelical vote, but Mike Pence also is there to kind of maybe lead Donald Trump in the direction that the establishment wants him to go, kind of be a foil to his over-the-top personality, certainly advising him in the way that the establishment would like Donald Trump to act, perhaps providing insight on picks for his cabinet and other people in the administration.
And that is because why? He had a lifetime career in the U.S. House of Representatives from 2001 to 2013.
Yes.
So 12 years he served on the U.S. House of Representatives. 10 of those 12 years he served on the House Judiciary Committee. Remember this, House Judiciary Committee. The House Judiciary Committee has responsibility to provide oversight over whom?
Yeah.
The Department of Justice.
Yes.
At the time when he began his career in the House, the Department of Homeland Security did not exist yet. Guess what? Right after 9/11, when he served on the Judiciary Committee, Mike Pence did what? He says on one of his C-SPAN videos that I've actually gone through and seen, he claims that he was the co-author of the Patriot Act.
I was not aware of that. Okay.
It's going to get a lot more interesting. It's going to continue to escalate depending on how much time you allow me.
Sure.
So in 2002-03 time frame, right, when the DHS, the discussions for creation of DHS and the expansion of the FISA, the Patriot Act occurred, what are some of the components that created?
Well, I mean, you just said FISA court.
It expanded the FISA court from 7 justices or judges to 11 to increase the number of people that, air quotes for those listening in, could legally, quote unquote, spy on American citizens. Now, I like to play in context. And I get it. I go into deep dive, and my content is not for the weak of heart of faux news and news facts and all the other 30-second sound bites. It requires a deeper discussion. So for context, the Pfizer... Well, in 1970... Let me do this quickly.
Okay.
I like to look at history to kind of see what is going to happen in the future. In the next minute, I'm going to give you the 150-year history. Okay. In the 1830s, the modern-day Democrat Party started. In the 1854, the modern-day Republicans started in Wisconsin, right? And then from there, they represented, over the last 170 years, basically, the 99.9% of the political power in the country,
right?
Those two parties. Fast forward to 1908, when the Bureau of Investigation was created, the precursor to the FBI, and then a few years later, he had a director of the Bureau by the name of J. Edgar Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
He was in that role for 48 years.
Yeah.
One phrase comes to mind when you hear 48 years, a person in one position. It's called deep state much?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or deep state a lot?
Yeah.
Deep state six times more than a president can be in power.
Yes, yes. J. Edgar Hoover had an unprecedented level of power, and he used the FBI essentially as his own personal enforcement unit.
Thank you, thanks. So a little bit of history there. So 48 years, a sitting senator is 6 years per term. President, 4 years, 2 terms, 8, a congressman, 2 years. So you can see how much leverage, power, accumulation of influence, manipulation that you can garner in the role of the FBI director. So 48 years later brings us into the 1970s, right?
Yes.
What happened in the late 60s by the FBI? You can look this up publicly.
COINTELPRO?
COINTELPRO, thank you. You just teed that up perfectly. What else happened? Let's think along the lines of assassinations, political assassinations in the 60s. Who are the top three names that come to mind?
Bobby Kennedy, JFK, and Martin Luther King.
Thank you.
Oh, Malcolm X, too.
Just rolling off the tongue. You just went, you one-upped me with the fourth one. Thank you. Thank you. So this is such an easy interview because you already know this stuff, and I'm glad that that's the case. Now let's move on to the 1970s. In 1973, a junior senator from Delaware took sworn into office by the name of?
Joseph Robinette Biden.
Actually, I think it's pronounced Zhidin, and I think his current role is the Chinese ambassador to the United States, who's currently squatting in the White House.
Absolutely, yes.
Right, so in 1973, who was the president and what was the dynamic then? If you look back a couple of interviews, I think Clay Clark just did one. He contextualized yesterday with General Flynn on the X-22 podcast. 1971 seems to be a pivotal year on some of this Chinese influence operations within the United States. Did you?
Absolutely. Nixon essentially opened the door for China.
Okay, perfect. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's slow down. We just did 160, 70 years. Now let's slow a little bit down for 2 minutes.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk about the 70s. So 73, your guy, Zhidin, becomes a senator from Delaware. In 1978, amidst all of the political spying assassinations, right? America kind of got a little perturbed. Why is the FBI spying on political opponents?
Yes.
We want to set some parameters and limitations to that. So what do? We create the FISA court. We, as a Congress, right?
Yeah.
And who is behind setting up and creating a legislation related to limitations on the FBI, the Department of Justice, the FISA court? How about the Judiciary Committee of the Senate and the House? Wouldn't you think that would be probably? Yeah, it is. It is the committee. Those are the committees. Now, let's move forward. 1978, the FISA Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is passed, creating the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. We'll call it FISA for short and FISC for short for the court. At that moment, judges were allowed on the court to be able to issue warrants when the FBI approached and said, hey, we need to spy on this domestic terrorist parent, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you get where I'm getting at, right? I mean, I'm kind of like going to a little bit extreme here, but back in the day, that's essentially the mechanism that they had to go through is to present to the FISA court judge to get a warrant to be able to legally spy on an American citizen that they alleged was working with a foreign power. You can see how easily they can extend that power and become corrupt and absolutely corrupt, because tell me this, is there a mechanism in place in order to go after someone that goes beyond the power and falsifies, etc., a warrant, a request for a warrant? And is there some sort of consequence for a judge that approves something that doesn't meet the threshold of probable cause or reasonable suspicion?
I don't actually know of it because I've never seen it happen.
It's kind of hard because the whole proceeding is done ex parte, meaning that the victim, if you will, or the defendant or the alleged perpetrator that they're trying to spy on,
they're not informed.
They're not informed. They're not part of the process. And it's by nature a classified mechanism. Now, yeah, I agree that there should be circumstances where that is the case if it's a national threat and a security concern, right? Not a security threat.
Sure.
But let's take a look. The seven judges that were appointed initially were done so in the statute, in the FISC. It says that there's one person that appoints those judges. There's only one person. Who do you think that would be?
Oh, gosh.
You don't know.
I don't know, so you have to help me.
If you were to guess, who would you think would be somebody legitimate to appoint a FISA judge?
I was going to say maybe the Supreme Court appointed them, but if it's one person, perhaps it would be someone from the Judiciary Committee? Maybe the president?
Okay, that's good.
FBI director?
So, I mean, I like how you're throwing out some ideas there. I would think the same thing without knowing the statute, right?
Yeah.
Well, when you look at the statute in and of itself, it rests sole power to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Okay. Now, let's contextualize that. So, if you're the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, and the rules say that you can only appoint sitting federal judges to the FISA court as an additional duty. Mm-hmm. That means how are federal judges appointed? By the president, right?
Right.
And confirmed by the Senate.
Yes.
So it's very important to know who the president at the time was that appointed and who the chairman of the Judiciary Committee was, mm-hmm. and the Senate Majority Leader. Because those are the three main players in determining whether or not you're going to be a sitting judge. And then on top of that, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to then become the FISA, a FISA court judge. So if you agree with me in the assumption that those four people probably have a good relationship,
right,
or there's some loyalties back and forth between the person appointed and confirmed to be a judge and then a FISA court judge, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. The historical relationships between those people would be very relevant to the events that we've seen playing out.
Now, do you think I probably did a deep dive on each of these relationships?
I would imagine so.
Yeah, so let's just jump in and see how that works out.
Do it.
And then how it applies to our little spying on Trump and how it applies to the raid on Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, break it down.
You're going to get canceled after you hear this.
Actually, Media Matters has written like 20 articles about me, so, you know, I'm already out there. I'm not worried about it. Let's just expose the corruption.
All right. So this is the research that I've done.
Yep.
I'll break it down where my assessment is,
okay,
and where just what the research and the facts show. So I'm just going to continue with some research and facts and connections.
Okay.
So in 1978, when the FISA court was first created, the first Chief Justice under this framework was who?
Oh, gosh.
Chief Justice Warren.
Warren. Okay.
And who appointed him? It was Nixon.
Yes.
Now, I get it. 78, Carter was the president, but I'm saying like when Warren was appointed,
yes,
it was Nixon before that.
Mm-hmm.
Nixon was what party?
Oh, he's a Republican.
Okay, let's see that. Okay, it's not a trend yet, right? One is not a trend, it's just not, whatever, first instance. Now let's move on. Keep in mind that in order, the judges rotate in the appointments, so every 2 years, a new kind of slate, one or two are appointed. So it's a staggered, you don't just appoint all of them at once, except for the initial phase,
right,
you know, when it was created. So let's move on to after Warren, the next Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court was Chief Justice William Rehnquist.
Yes.
And William Rehnquist was appointed by none other than Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Now, here's a little bit of analysis I wanted for you to come with. I should say an assumption that I think most people agree with. Would you assume with me that Ronald Reagan was not really a deep stater because he was an actor in California, right? And then after that, he became governor of California. I get it. He probably created some relationship, you know, in the California, but like how deep was he in the D.C. swamp, if you will?
I think he was as close to being as far away from the swamp as you could possibly be, along with President Trump, because he was an outsider. And I think that if Ronald Reagan was part of the deep state, they wouldn't have tried to assassinate him almost as soon as he came into office.
So what do you think? Who was his vice president? president.
Oh, George H.W. Bush, former CIA director.
You see where this is going to go?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you know where this is going to go. So let's move on with that, since you know where this is going to go. And it sounds like your listeners are probably just as astute as you are.
Yes, they're all very attuned.
Which I appreciate. And so, because like most of society is not ready for it. It's like audiences like yours that are. So it's taking it to the next step, right, to connect the dots. So William Rehnquist, appointed by Reagan. Let's do a deep dive. Like, okay, do you think that the vice president, the caretaker of the Uniparty, former director of the CIA, now vice president, you think that he probably had a role in advising on who that chief justice should be?
Absolutely.
Okay, right, absolutely. And as the director of the CIA, right, like, he probably knows a little bit about the FISA court and that process, too.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a strong assumption, right?
Yes, very, very.
Way more than strong.
It's right there.
Like the strongest.
Yeah.
And so, okay, tense much? You see where we're getting there? All right, so, what you know, as George H.W. Bush was to Reagan, I'm going to lead you through into kind of seeing how I see it. Mike Pence was the same thing to Donald J. Trump.
Sure.
Let's get there.
I can see it.
So William Rehnquist, he passes, and then in 2005, a new chief justice is appointed. Oh, by the way, Rehnquist, Ronald Reagan, what party?
Ronald Reagan, Republican.
Right? Yeah. Get it? Yeah. So that's two.
Yeah.
And usually three is a trend, right? But whatever. So two. Next up, we have 2005. Who's appointed?
The
current chief justice.
Yeah. Oh, John Roberts.
John Roberts.
Yeah. By George W. Bush.
And who was his vice president?
Dick Cheney, the dark side overlord himself.
You see how I'm going to introduce that last name into what is going on currently?
Yep.
I think you're already probably ahead of me, but we have to step through it.
We'll go through it.
You know where I'm going.
Yeah.
So, remember that name, Cheney.
Yep.
Absolutely. So, Chief Justice John Roberts, remember, he is now the one to appoint who is on the FISA court.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate authority on who allows the FBI for them to spy on. That's pretty big power, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Unprecedented, I would say.
All right. So what does that look like? If there are seven judges for the first two chief justices for the appointments, now our newly minted Chief Justice John Roberts is the first chief justice in the history of the FISA court to be in a position, if based on his duration, to be able to appoint all 11. Because remember, in the Patriot Act, which was co-authored by Mike Pence,
yes,
under Bush Cheney, to expand that FISA court from 7 to 11 by 2012, Chief Justice John Roberts had appointed every single one of the 11 FISA court judges.
That's deep, Ivan.
Let me pause there because I want you to now tell me what that does to you in terms of analysis. And what do you think is possible under that construct? What is within the realm of possible?
I mean, absolute control over the machinations of the United States. I mean, if you have the power to spy on whoever you want, you can get whatever information is lurking beneath the surface. You can control through blackmail virtually every person in a position of power to ensure that your agenda is implemented. And if you need to destroy somebody, like, say, a president of the United States that doesn't want to go along with the deep state action and wants to completely gut those corrupt elements from the United States government, you can make sure that that is unable to take place.
I couldn't have said it more eloquently. Now, let's hearken back to J. Edgar Hoover of 48 years.
Yes, drag queen.
Yes, I love you. You know the deal. So, by 2012, he was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court for only 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring into the conversation, somebody we mentioned already. We talked about J. Edgar for 48 years. By 2012, we mentioned Joseph Gedin.
Mm-hmm.
73, he was brought into this conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which committees would you guess, based on what I'm saying, Gedin served on and later became the chairman of?
Probably judiciary.
Man, you're good.
Yep.
So now that with that data point, please tell me your analysis on this.
I think that these people play the long game. Obviously, you know, a lot of people talk about a grand overarching plan that the good guys might be trying to engage in to wrestle power away from the deep state. But at the same time, whatever might exist on our side, it also exists on their side. And they have been looking to ensure their hegemonic control of the United States from now until eternity in perpetuity.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right, so let's keep moving. So we talked about 2012. The totality of the FISA court. Let's go back real quick as a data point. And I think you're probably going to pick up on this based on what I'm hearing so far. In 2005, within 5 months, May and September, so you had Chief Justice John Roberts appointed. The Assistant U.S. Attorney for Maryland was appointed.
Yes. Rod.
Go ahead. Give us his full name.
Oh, okay. Rod Rosenstein. Yeah.
I just felt that you probably done the research on this.
Definitely.
What does that mean to you? The person appointing U.S. attorneys is the president.
Yep.
And they have to go through what process? The judiciary.
Yes.
Right? Let's hash that again. The Judiciary Committee of the Senate. Mm-hmm. The majority leader of the Senate. The vice president at the time, Dick Cheney, probably has also a role in trying to make sure that their guy is in there, right?
Right.
So in the collective, especially if you have a president that's like, doesn't really have a network or care who's going to be, you know, on the bench, right? So what do we know about Rod Rosenstein?
Oh, man. I mean, he was involved in all kinds of nasty stuff in Maryland. And obviously, he was deeply involved in Spygate, too.
Okay, that's what we're getting to.
Yeah.
So Rod Rosenstein, appointed by the same president, same system, within 5 months of Chief Justice Roberts being appointed. A weak assumption would be that there's a relationship there.
Absolutely.
Possibly. Some of the assumptions that we made are like definitely strong. This one is, I would agree that it's a weaker assumption, but just go along with me. Even if you don't agree that there was any relationship, let's keep moving forward and see how the connections happen. So we move forward to 2012, 2013, 2014. Wait a second. Mike Pence served from 2001 to 2013. Then he became governor of Indiana.
Yes.
Keep in mind that Speaker Paul Ryan, new name just dropped during this interview, was in Congress as well during the entire time that Mike Pence was.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Like, there's 435 Muldoons in there, right? They may know each other, may not. And then if they're in the same party, okay, they probably know each other a little bit better. And if you happen to be in the leadership position, I get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they know each other.
I would assume so, yes.
Okay. So 2000, now, this is where I think it's going to get really interesting. Who was the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency from 2012 to 2014? The director of the Defense Intelligence Agency is a gentleman by the name of General Flynn.
Yep.
I'm kind of like trying to line you up here. In 2014, on C-SPAN, during his testimony, the annual threat assessment, he basically talks about some things. Remember, Obama says that ISIS is a JV team and nothing to see here. But yet, when you look at the publicly facing mission statement of the Defense Intelligence Agency, is what? In defense of the nation, right?
Absolutely.
So you want somebody that speaks truth to power, right? And to the American public, obviously within the parameters of the law. And if there's a threat, you need to identify it and then talk about it as one of the threats.
You would think that's what they would want you to do, but Mike Flynn did that, and they essentially skewered him.
Thank you. You said it. I didn't.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yep.
So when you speak truth to power amidst the political leaders saying, it's nothing to see here. ISIS is not a threat. JV team. They're pulled out of Iraq, and now it's not really looking good. What happens?
Well, I mean, they go after you. I mean, obviously, if you're not going to play ball, then they're going to replace you with somebody who is going to go along with their agenda.
And let's take a look. When was he resigned? About August of 2014, okay. Let's just say. Let's look at 2014 in a little bit of detail. I know we're going to go back to July of 2016, but I think this is necessary context. And this is all going to add to it. Every name that I've mentioned so far, I'm adding the dominoes to kind of put it all into one frame for later on. 2014, I don't know, March to June time frame. What was going on in Ukraine right after the Olympics in Sochi?
Oh, the color revolution. I mean, they were replacing the current government with one that was more sympathetic to the needs of the deep state, CIA, State Department. Victoria Nuland all over the line.
Man, you're good. Yeah, there we go. Yep. There we go. Perfect. You're dropping the right names as well. Mm-hmm. I like the sound of this. Yes. So with that, if you take a look at the Washington, D.C.'s main disinformation purveyor, I think they pronounce it the Compost. If you look at some of their reporting from, April of 2014, and in there you can kind of see.
A human catastrophe is closing in. Nobody knows how far this one is going to go. You can feel the heat as tension is rising globally. War is expensive. Open a Noble Gold Investments IRA today, and you can claim a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin. Just use the promo code GOLD. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
See in the public press that John Brennan, cover of darkness. Actually, this would be in Russian media. They expose that John Brennan is under the cover of darkness going to Ukraine. And a couple weeks later, who else comes out there?
I don't know on this one.
Failed Vice President Biden.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. He went there and had him fire the prosecutor because he was looking into Hunter Biden. Yes. $1 billion in aid. Otherwise, you know,
there's a little bit more to that.
Okay.
So when he goes out there, you can see there that he's acting as though the head of the cabinet, because there's a meeting of the Ukrainian cabinet and failed Vice President Joseph Zhiden as appointed by failed President Hussein.
Yes. Barry Soetoro.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I think I know one of his names is Hussein.
Yes.
So he's in there appointing Zhiden as the point man, failed Vice President Zhiden. And then he basically goes out there, heads up the cabinet. Brennan teed that up for him. And then in his conversations with good old, what's his name? Petro Poroshenko?
Petro Poroshenko.
If I'm not mistaken. Yep. And what conversations did they have? And this is according to the Compost, right, that I was talking about. They basically say that he's going to help develop the economy of Ukraine, meaning Zhiden, and he's going to do it and propose unconventional ways in order to improve their natural gas industry, right, and natural resources industry. And the way he proposed to do that was exposed 2 weeks later, again, in the Compost reported. You can look in there. And his thought behind the unconventional development of their natural gas sector was to place somebody that just spent 1 month after being commissioned in the U.S. Naval Reserves, that this individual got into the Naval Reserves under two waivers, one for an age waiver by his dad and one for a drug use waiver by his dad, while being sworn in the Rose Guard. And his dad happened to be the failed Vice President Zhiden. After he joined the Naval Reserves for a month, meaning he attended one drill, and they did a drug test on this individual, what others call, urinated hot.
Is that what they call it?
I'm going to keep that clean. The other term may start with the letter P.
Yes.
The one before the letter Q.
right.
Right?
Yep.
So he urinated hot. And what does that mean? Yeah, sayonara, pal. And now that you have that body of experience of having served for 1 weekend in the U.S. Naval Reserves, you are now going to be elevated as sitting on the board of Burisma, as promulgating the failed Vice President Zhiden's policy that he just agreed with Petro Poroshenko to advocate for the development of
natural gas and oil.
Natural gas and oil for the development. So that what? According to Bobulinski, so that 10% could go where?
Straight up to Zhiden.
Yeah.
Also the big
known
guy.
As, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I want to make sure we fleshed that. Yeah, okay. I think that pretty much covers that aspect of, I think, Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
I may or may not have other stuff, but can't share that.
Well, maybe, perhaps in the future, we can talk about that on another show.
I only talk about the public stuff that I can legally under my First Amendment and my private capacity based research I've done in my private capacity.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Yes, yes, yes. I understand. Don't want you breaking any oaths here.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of the context of what Hunter Biden was in back there. Oh, no, by the way, the experience he developed in order to be very effective to sit on that board, other than that one drill weekend that he participated in, based on him urinating hot, we can kind of extrapolate and say he had a very strong olfactory sense in being it, you know, from his time of sniffing cocaine,
right,
as well as smoking crack. I would guess, I mean, my assumption would be, based on those nasal olfactory senses, he could probably sniff out oil fields better than any other human being on the planet.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that there is a petrochemical aspect to the processing of cocaine. I think that gasoline comes into it. So he would probably, you're right, be able to sniff out those oil fields.
And again, I'm not an expert in this. I'm just, this again, that's not fact. I'm just giving a little bit of commentary and assessment, and that's what I'm thinking. I think most people would probably agree with that.
And certainly, it's not that he was experienced working for any natural gas companies or even any energy companies. I mean, he just kind of walked right into it. Luckily, he was the son of the vice president, and he wasn't in rehab at the time.
Yeah, and I mean, that's only coincidental, right? I'm sure, like, there's no sarcasm here at all, obviously, right?
No nepotism here in the United States.
Whatsoever.
There's no such thing as American royalty.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. So, now that your listeners kind of probably already knew a lot of this, but does it give a little bit more detail?
Yes, there's a lot of context, and I think seeing that 30,000-foot view over a course of, you know, 40 or 50 years, it certainly helps.
Now,
people sometimes forget how long this fight has been going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, that brings us into 2014, and then as General Flynn is resigned by O'Biden, 2015, from what I've seen in reports, there's a meeting between General Flynn. This is after, you know, he becomes a private citizen now, retired. And I saw some reporting that said that he had a meeting with Donald J. Trump at Trump Tower in New York. And in that, basically, General Flynn talks to President, or talks to private citizen Donald Trump.
Candidate Trump?
No.
They're not even candidate. He hadn't walked down the escalator yet.
Are you in?
Exploratory.
Yeah, so this is about that time, right? He's like,
yeah.
Are you serious about General Flynn asks him, are you serious about running for president? Because I'm a pretty serious guy. If you're serious, I'll help you out.
Flynn knew where the bodies were buried.
What is that?
Metaphorically.
You're getting ahead of me. I like this. No, I want you to, because this, I like this. This is interactive. It's funner this way. So, as the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, basically committing to supporting a candidate that is not leveraged by, nor has any leverage over, a little bit, either of the 99.9% of the political power in this country, is that problematic for both of those parties?
Oh, yeah. That's a major problem, because he came in not as a politician, somebody who truly was going to do what he said, and he did. He was not controlled by anybody, and that's why I loved Donald Trump from the moment he walked down that escalator. I was so sick of American politics.
If you're one or both of those political parties, and there's an increased level of support for Trump, do you want to set the framework to create leverage over him?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Trump was an inevitability. So ensuring that there was somebody there with his hand on his shoulder, i.e. Mike Pence, I can see how that would be so perfect for them.
Who's interviewing whom? Or is this called the Socratic method?
This is the Socratic method, yes.
As an attorney, having gone through law school, right? Yep. I think it's the best way to learn, right? Mm-hmm. Let's, because I think you know 99.9% of it. I just happen to be one of the few people probably that just kind of did the little bit of work to connect it.
Yep.
Now, let's move on. 2015. So at the time when General Flynn approaches Donald J. Trump, who in his network understands the machine in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, Roger Stone. Are you talking about General Flynn's network or Donald Trump's network?
Donald Trump's network.
Oh, I mean, I would say Roger Stone. I don't know where he was at with Bannon at that time, but certainly Bannon would as well.
Not yet, but yeah, that's later. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, you're on it. So I need to talk to Steve about this someday, one time on his show for like a long form. God.
I've always wanted to interview Steve Bannon.
It's going to
be great.
Yeah. Oh, I have stuff to help this case out, but we'll see.
Oh, right on.
So you named those names perfectly. So, of any prominent figures out there that have a name ID, that have some qualities behind them and substance and credibility, General Flynn, I argue, was the very first person in Trump world for that candidacy of any consequence that understood the machine that came out to support him.
I absolutely agree, and that's why they took Flynn out as soon as they were able to.
Full stop. Yeah. So, 2015, the candidacy happens. 2016, candidate Donald J. Trump is out there, and he's crushing the opposition. There are 17 candidates. However, you have to look at the converse of this. People look at, yes, he's crushing everybody. He's in the center of the stage. But let's look at the reverse of the numbers. How many people were voting for Trump in those primaries?
Oh, I actually don't know the actual numbers.
It was in the 30-35 percentile range.
Okay.
While that is a massive win against all of the rest of them, what percentage are not voting for him?
I mean, that would be like, 70% of the country.
65-70% of the Republican base. So when you look at it that way, which a lot of people don't, like when you ask questions, it should be like, when somebody asks you something, you should immediately in your mind think of what is the opposite of that,
okay,
to kind of change and mitigate the bias of the initial question. So when you flip it and say 65-70% of the Republican base did not approve of Donald J. Trump, that's somewhat problematic. That puts you in a weak position, right?
Certainly.
And that puts the party in a position of strength and leverage if they can coalesce that the anti-Trump vote, or the, I shouldn't say anti, but like the non-Trump vote.
Sure.
That's probably more broad in it, because that one of the components of the non-Trump vote is the anti-Trump. There's, people that are like,
it's like a Venn diagram. Second.
Yeah, exactly. So going into July, the convention, and then determining who your vice presidential pick is, how much leverage does Donald J. Trump really have on who the vice president will be?
I would think that he wouldn't have all that much at all. I mean, the party is going to tell him, if you want us to support you, if you want to ensure that you get the support of the majority of the Republican Party, then you're going to go with who we tell you, which is, i.e., Mike Pence.
That is exactly my assessment as well.
Yeah.
Full stop. Because guess what? Who's on your short list? If you're Donald J. Trump and you're about loyalty, who would you want as your right hand, as the vice president, really?
I have no idea. I mean, who would realistically have been a pick for him as vice president? Who do you think would have been vice president if he could have chosen? I mean, I would love to see General Flynn as a vice president, but I mean, I think that he was going to do good things where they had him placed. But I don't know. Who do you think?
I paused on purpose to let you kind of flesh that out,
yeah.
And I'm glad it went that way.
Okay,
because you went where I think most people would go.
Yeah,
is that based on what I've already kind of teed up? It was leading a little bit. It was publicly out there that I think General Flynn was on the short list.
Okay,
but if you're Donald J. Trump, you're doing the math, you're doing the calculations. What just happened? General Flynn, appointed by Obama twice.
Oh yeah,
in senior positions.
People still talk about the optics of that as if it's an argument against him.
You think that there's nothing to hide?
Yeah.
It happened. Mm-hmm. There's no like, oh, trying to. It happened. Let me contextualize those appointments. General Flynn was the senior intelligence officer for an organization. Let's just say he has served in position. I gotta make sure that I do it this the right way, mm-hmm. and be as genuine as I can, right? And still be kosher. He served in the most selective organization as an intelligence officer in the entire planet of all militaries.
Okay.
You don't get to be in that position without having been the top performer in your profession, not just 1 year, not just a few years before that position, every single day of your military career.
Absolutely.
You have to have been the top performer.
About experience, ability, and knowledge.
And in addition to that, you have had to gotten along with those that selected you. Like, first you have to meet that threshold of performance, and then obviously. So he was very well respected.
It's not a political position. Like, Obama didn't choose him because of who he had been voting for.
No, those were on merit.
Yes.
All of his military positions before those two appointments were based on merit. And then the Deputy Director of National Intelligence, he was appointed by Obama, and then subsequently the Director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. So, yeah, got it. Was he appointed by Obama? Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, great, got it. But before that, like, he earned it.
So this is something that I think people...
No matter what president.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is what people forget.
People choose from.
That's my point. Yes, you know, I mean, like,
of the
you're
highest
pulling
caliber.
From a very small pool, okay? You know, General Flynn just happened to be the cream of the crop.
Yes. In 2010, a little aside, for those, you have, most of your listeners are deep researchers?
Yes, they are.
Okay, good. A small aside, if you haven't read it already, in 2010, if you can link this, maybe.
Sure.
An organization called CNAS, Center for National, Studies. I can't remember the name right now. General Flynn, when he was the senior intelligence officer in Afghanistan, him and his, let's just say another Marine Corps captain, I think it was Matt Pottinger.
Okay.
Heard that name?
I have heard that name before.
Wrote an article, and in that article, it basically called out the intelligence community's failures in Afghanistan, where it was, year in and year out, and we're basically calling out himself and the organization in a public forum. And oddly enough, he survived that, right?
Right. I have heard. I am familiar with it.
That was one of the first major public manifestations of his desire to speak truth to power at personal expense.
Sure.
And then later we saw that again in 2014 during that testimony at personal expense, which caused him to be resigned, right? Mm. Of calling out him truth to power. So, anyhow, he gets resigned. 2015, we're on to 2015. 2016, we talked about the convention. And so if you're Donald J. Trump and the Republican Party doesn't trust you because you've been appointed by Obama twice, which makes sense, right? And what do the Democrats think in the Obama wing of things about General Flynn?
Well, they hated him. I mean, he could have literally brought down the entirety of the deep state operation. I mean, based upon the knowledge that he had, the experience, and everything that he wanted to expose from his own public statements.
Was he director of the DIA when the Ukraine crisis thing was going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So he could have totally blown the lid off of that as well.
No comment.
Yeah. I love it.
You can extrapolate what you want off of that one.
Oh, absolutely, I will.
Okay. More to follow on that one. Stay tuned.
I will
talk about it, but we'll see.
I've been following the Ukraine thing since 2014. You know, so this is, it's interesting watching all of it culminate now.
All right, so let's move on to, in that frame, does General Flynn have any political base and support in either party?
No, doesn't seem so.
And then, by extension, the next question is, what value would he bring as a vice president to help secure a nomination, or not a nomination, the general election?
Oh, I think that he would probably be extremely popular based upon his military service, and I'm sure that the entirety of the U.S. Armed Forces would then vote for Donald Trump just based upon that.
But as a vice presidential pick, where you need to bring in other
coalitions? Oh, it wouldn't help.
The RNC?
Yeah, that would be a problem.
I'm just adding in, like, I'm beating a dead horse of what you originally said, that absolutely. The RNC in this instance has leverage, even though based on what I was reading publicly and seeing in some video and interviews, General Flynn may have been a top pick for President Trump, but it was untenable. And he had to go with the RNC would present to him. And who was that, and why was that? Let's deep dive into that.
So, Mike Pence, because he's controlled.
Mike Pence, we talked about, right? Do you think that the Republican Speaker of the House probably wants to give some advice to the nominee on who that vice president should be?
Yes, absolutely.
And that was who?
That was Paul Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. And you think that the chairman of the Republican National Committee would also provide some advice to the nominee for their party on who that should be?
Absolutely.
And that was?
I don't remember who was the chairman of the RNC.
Reince Priebus.
Reince Priebus, that's right. He ended up becoming chief of staff.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Reince Priebus. Now, Reince Priebus is from what state?
Oh, I don't know.
Wisconsin.
Oh, as well as Paul Ryan.
Yes.
Yes. And brothers in arms here.
And where did Reince Priebus go to college?
I don't know on that one either.
Whitewater College.
Whitewater College. Okay.
Now, who else went to Whitewater?
Are you going to say Paul Ryan?
Paul Ryan's chief of staff.
Okay. I don't know who that was.
Who was the third roommate?
I don't know. Paul Ryan? Wait, I don't know.
Robin Voss.
Robin Voss. Oh, God, that's a big name now.
Tell me who that is.
Yeah, he's the Speaker of the House in, like, Wisconsin or something like that. Yeah, Robin Voss single-handedly standing in the way of any election integrity efforts taking place in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Are the synapses firing on all cylinders right now?
Yeah.
And understanding why he did everything in his power to delay, cajole, and not do anything about remedying 2020?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The Whitewater Mafia that I just laid out, it's out there. And while Wisconsin knows it, the national, our movement nationally needs to understand. We get it. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, deep state. No. We need to go to the next layer and identify name, location, and time of every individual actor so that we can start applying the necessary pressure to remove them one by one.
I absolutely agree, and I think that one thing that people fail to recognize quite often, they think about the deep state as this, like, monolithic, single-celled entity, but we're talking about compartmentalization in the same way that we have in the intelligence and military fields. And, you know, I mean, there are cells throughout the country, and each group is going to have their own personalized interests with the overarching interests of maintaining control and, you know, perhaps global criminal cabal activities.
And here's where we get to today.
Okay.
July of 2016, Pence is foisted on Donald J. Trump as the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Because those three names that I mentioned have, oh, by the way, the Speaker of the House in Wisconsin, the chair of the national state legislatures, the president of the national state legislators, the 7,000 legislators in all different states.
Okay.
Robin Voss. President of
Okay, wow.
You see how the power structure set?
Yeah, there's
all Wisconsin.
Wow, that's crazy. I know. I had no idea.
Oh, so coincidental. It's totally coincidence that they happen to go to college together.
Wow.
All right, so let's keep going. What happens after 2 weeks after Pence becomes the vice presidential nominee?
I don't know. You gotta
crossfire
hurricane
and crossfire razor.
Crossfire razor. There's a number of crossfires.
What those are?
Oh, I mean, those were the investigations into President Trump and General Flynn.
Close.
Yeah.
It's called the illegal spying on the Trump campaign.
Yes.
And the illegal spying on the biggest threat to the Uniparty, a gentleman by the name of General Michael Flynn.
Yes.
Now, what were the vectors of attack? facilitate that? How did they create the frame? Let's go back to the FISA stuff we were just talking to.
Okay.
Talking about.
All right.
Tell me. So how do you think it happened? I'll tell you probably that's what happened or not.
Well, they created fake... sorry. They created false pretenses, took it to the FISA court, and then used the FBI to essentially set them up and spy on them and use that as an effort to get them out of the way.
You notice how now that enough people have identified that there was something going on there... They have to create some sort of story that we're going to believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we all know that the Hillary Clinton campaign did what? Created what?
Created the dossier and hired Christopher Steele and Fusion GPS.
Fed that information over to which organization?
They fed it to
the Orrs.
They used Bruce and Nellie Orr. They also fed it over to John McCain and his buddies, and then also to BuzzFeed. Disseminated it throughout Washington, D.C., and then Washington Post, a whole bunch of other fake news outlets.
And who was the reporter from the feed thing you just talked about? Was it Allie Watkins?
Allie Watkins, yeah. Wasn't she also sleeping with, like, the sergeant-at-arms or something like that?
With the chief security officer of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence?
Yes, yes, yes.
Dude, we can go deep now that I know you've done the research for this. I'm going to take you to the next level.
Okay, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
So, do you think the FBI... Remember we talked about the FISA court? Probably, here's my assumption. If you're a FISA court judge, you have dual loyalties. Again, this is an assumption.
Mm-hmm.
One is to the president that appointed you, and right, the judiciary chair and the ecosystem that appointed you initially
right.
on the federal bench, and two, the chief justice that appointed you to the FISA court.
Absolutely. I would say that's a fairly safe assumption.
So at this point, Chief Justice Roberts, all of them, and Bush, Obama, Bush, for all of them.
Yes.
Okay? Now let's take a look at the FBI, FBI and the DOJ, that's teeing up the request to spy on someone. What does that consist of?
Like, who are the players involved? I mean, James Comey.
Republican or Democrat?
Oh, well, I mean, it's Republican and Democrat. But, I guess it depends on which aspect you're specifically pointing to.
Let's take a look at his FEC report, right? Federal Election Commission?
Yeah.
What do we see?
With James Comey?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. You have to tell me.
Well, who he was appointed by, right?
Oh, he was appointed by Barack Obama.
Okay, and then?
Yes. And then also Donald Trump. He stayed on with Donald Trump.
Well, what about... What about Rod Rosenstein, who was the Deputy Attorney General?
He was appointed under Obama as well, wasn't he?
Well, let's go back. Wasn't he appointed as a U.S. Attorney
Yes.
Yeah, remember that?
yes, I do.
I forgot to mention that. Didn't Scaramucci, remember him?
Anthony Scaramucci, yes.
Wasn't he a law school student mates with... Rod Rosenstein?
I wasn't aware of that one, actually.
Yeah.
And if I did, then I forgot it.
You didn't. You didn't know.
No.
I can almost guarantee that.
Okay.
That's very hard to find out.
Wow. Okay. So what, did they graduate at the same time, or are they just like in school at the same law school?
I don't know for sure if they graduated at the same time. I just know, well.
At least the same alma mater?
One very credible source that told me that, yes.
Okay.
He was with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we'll have to verify that, but I didn't need to verify it because of the circumstances of the information, how it was given to me, and the source.
Okay.
So I'm like, it's pretty solid.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Very solid.
Okay.
It could be wrong, but like it was so solid, like I don't need to check it.
Okay.
Like, I'm pretty comfortable with that.
Sure.
So. Rosenstein. Let's go down the list. James Comey. McCabe. Right? The list goes on.
Yeah.
So who's the final signature authority for doing a FISA? If you look at the Woods procedure and this and that, based on the IG reports that have been published since then, that we now know how a lot of this process works, Horowitz, right?
Yes.
And this IG reports and all that. It turns out that the Deputy Attorney General is the one that signed off on the FISA.
Which was Rod Rosenstein.
So if you're the judge,
mm-hmm.
tempted to say the names of these judges, but it's better now.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I mean, I know about Rudy Contreras.
You said it. You said it. I didn't. Thank you.
No problem. I've said his name hundreds of times on the show, so no worries.
So,
Judge, FBI comes to my house tomorrow.
Judge. Yep. Judge.
Judge Rudy Contreras.
My name is Rod Rosenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Good to see you.
Pleasure, Rod, always.
You had a great party last weekend. I loved it. Thanks for hosting us again.
Absolutely.
But family's good? Okay, good. Yep. I got another FISA.
Take a look.
Who's it for?
Oh.
It's nothing significant. Carter Page.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, what's the precedence for it? Do they even ask? I don't know how the actual process goes.
It's good. I mean, look at the fast stack of papers.
All right.
You don't need to read through this.
Must be good. I got a lot of other cases to work on this week in a totally different court, so we'll rubber stamp it.
Okay. Do what you need to do. Oh, wait. Or it could have went something like, wait, Carter Page? Who's that? Oh, that's of no consequence.
Yeah.
Sign. Or it could have been Carter Page? Isn't he on the Trump campaign? Oh, heck yeah, sign.
Yeah. Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
Now, I got to give them credit that they used vectors of attack that have plausible deniability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or plausible justification. Carter Page, in his private capacity, he did oil deals with Russia.
Yep. He'd worked for the CIA.
Thank you.
Yes.
You teed that up for me. And he was an informant to the CIA about those deals. As a patriot, former naval officer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when Kevin Kleinsmith over at the FBI requested whether or not Carter Page, who they just got a FISA on, was working and informing of his contacts in Russia, the CIA, which at the time Carter Page couldn't really talk about due to his NDA,
yep.
Right? He was being professional about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That whoever they contacted the CIA said, yeah, he's reporting back. Kevin Kleinsmith went ahead and, you know what? That doesn't really fit. That's going to kind of screw our little FISA process here. We're getting a lot of information that we need about the entire ecosystem of the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just change that to a no, he's not.
Right.
Let me just reverse it.
Was not. I just added one word and it changed the context of the whole thing.
And so now, if you're a judge, you can say, yeah, I was bamboozled.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't know that. But did you know that?
I've always assumed that they definitely knew that.
Yeah. It's hard. I'll give the judges the benefit of the doubt that they didn't know and they were bamboozled. But you always have to ask the question. How much does society believe that? Right?
That's the end of part one with my interview with Ivan Raiklin. Please continue on and download part two and take a listen. We'll see you in the next one.